New Hampshire Transportation Committee to order at 1:47 p.m. Today is Thursday, March 13, 2025, in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Members present today are Senator Keel, Senator Tobin, and myself, Senator Durkin. Senator Stedman is excused, and Senator Schauer will be along shortly. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off our silencer cell phones. I'd like to extend a warm sense of transportation welcome to our recording secretary, Heather Ramseth, and our LAO moderator, Doug Bridges. Welcome, everyone, to Sense of Transportation. We have one item on our agenda today, a presentation on, not that, on Port McKinney. And we will have that presentation in a moment. Thank you. Here to give that presentation on Port McKenzie is David Griffin and Megan Clemens. You could join us at the table. Welcome to Senate Transportation. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and Committee members. For the record, my name is Megan Clemens. I'm the External Affairs Director for the Alaska Railroad Corporation, and plan on being quiet for a good portion to start the presentation, but looking forward to joining the discussion a little later on.
Good afternoon. My name is Dave Griffin. I'm the Port Operations Manager for Port McKenzie. Thank you for having us today.
Most excellent. Well,
all right. So we are here today to talk about Port McKenzie and what we're calling this presentation, Navigating Multimodal Infrastructure Development in the Point McKenzie Region. So I'm going to start out by just kind of giving an overview of Port McKenzie, sort of what we've got going on, a little bit of recent history, some of our operational challenges and successes, and then we'll move into more of a discussion about infrastructure development in the Point McKenzie region and how the port is sort of a cornerstone with future development in this region. So Port McKenzie and the surrounding borough-owned port district lands serve as a multimodal gateway to South Central and Interior Alaska. Due to its strategic location and short distance from Anchorage, just 2 miles by water, the port continues to attract business from a wide variety of maritime industry operators and business interests working in Cook Inlet and the surrounding South Central region. As other ports in the region, such as Seward, Homer, Whittier, and Anchorage, contend with aging infrastructure, congestion, capacity due to tourism and construction projects, Port McKenzie is stepping up and meeting the needs of operators seeking more flexibility. As a result, the port received business this past year from several new operators, some from Homer, some from Seattle Tacoma area. Most of it was barge activity, and it involved movement of cargo, project support cargo to Western Alaska, equipment, fuel, modular housing, things like that, as well as maintenance supplies and wind turbine components for Fire Island. Additionally, the port docked 2 bulk carriers in 2024. One imported 32,000 tons of cement, and the other imported 52,000 tons of bulk salt as part of the statewide winter road maintenance contract. The strategic location of the port and the access it provides is of importance to the U.S. Department of Defense for training, and it's also being evaluated for the import of munitions and sensitive cargo. In the past couple of years, on average, we've been receiving at least one visit per month from the military as they are assessing use of the port and the port district for their activities. And in October, the Army's Surface Deployment and Distribution Command performed a principal operation at the barge dock. A significant number of the military visits have been in support of the upcoming Arctic Edge 2025 exercises, which will be taking place at Port McKenzie for approximately 3 to 4 weeks. A bright note that took place at the port this past year was a policy protection project. This was a $10.5 million project funded by the Economic Development Administration, and we were able to wrap 32 of our deep draft dock piles with heavy gauge steel sleeves, and you'll see some photos of that in the presentation. By putting these sleeves on our piles, at a minimum, it's expected to provide an additional 25 years of life to the dock. In addition to wrapping the piles, we also installed sacrificial galvanic anodes, part of cathodic protection. And we have also been working on a design for a barge haul-out facility. We've reached the 95% benchmark for the design, and we're currently working on permitting. And once this ramp is completed, it'll allow us to haul barges up out of the water for winter storage, inspection, maintenance, and repairs. Okay, moving on. So this presentation is just a slideshow. There's not a lot of words. So just kind of, like I said earlier, we're going to go through it, give you an overview of the port, the region, and why we feel that this port plays a significant role in the future development of the state of Alaska. So where are we? The circle here on this map just depicts the Cook Inlet, the water body there, and we're at the very top of that. So where are we in relation to water bodies in the upper inlet? We're at the base of Kinnick Arm, so the Matanuska and Kinnick Rivers flow out of the mountains there and then empty into the upper Cook Inlet. These waters are challenging in that we have extreme tidal fluctuations, the second largest tidal fluctuations in North America, on average 30 feet per tide cycle. And the water is very filthy, very cold, and we do have ice, obviously, but it doesn't lock up solids, just pan ice that floats around. And this map we're looking at here is just a regional access map. So our port is, in the port district, is that area bounded in red. It's about 9,000 acres. So what we have is not just a port with a deep water dock and a barge dock, but we also have 9,000 acres of uplands dedicated to industrial commercial use in support of the port. We also have about 4 square miles of tidal and submerged lands and about 2 miles of shoreline that can all be developed at some point in the future if we choose to expand the port. We are connected by, we're connected on the road system there. From Anchorage, you would drive approximately 90 miles, or about 45 miles from Vaughan, down the Kennedy Goose Bay Road, out to West Point McKenzie Road, down Point McKenzie Road to get to the port. It's all paved. We also have 3-phase power out there. And then also you'll notice on the map is one of the items we're going to talk about today is the Port McKenzie Rail Extension. That's the green hatch line from Houston that leads down to the port. It's a 32-mile short line that's about half completed. Of the 32 miles, approximately 25 miles of embankment has been installed. Of the 7 bridges, 6 of the bridges are installed. The right-of-way has been acquired. The federal authorization from the Surface Transportation Board is in hand. All the environmental permitting work has been done, and to date, approximately $184 million has been expended on this project. Additionally, there is the West Sioux City access route. You'll see that's the yellow hatch line that moves to the west. That's a 100-mile-long proposed road leading up into the mountains to a minerals district. The first, as of about a year ago, the first 22 miles has been, that portion of that development, including the permitting, has been taken over by the state Department of Transportation. That remaining 80 miles or so is that's being managed and handled by ADA. And so once completed, this will provide access over the Susitna River with a bridge. That's the constraint once that bridge is completed. Then there's a variety of different opportunities out west, and that's something that we'll talk about a little bit as well, because in this region, there is no federal land. It's all state land, native land, borough land, and private land. And there are a lot of natural resources out here. There's also a lot of opportunities for folks to access their property. It's quite a bit of private property out in this region as well. In terms of future growth, we see this area as continuing to grow. And I put this map up here because I think it's important to see where we're at, the port is at in relation to Fairbanks. When we talk about developing our resources, there's really only one port that can service the export of bulk commodities, and that's Port McKenzie. Our other ports in South Central, Anchorage, for instance, is at capacity. They are primarily a container port, so that's where all of our containers come in for the big box stores, groceries, you know, Fred Meyer's, Safeway, Costco, Best Buy. So they've got mass in the tote. They bring up containers each week. They also bring in fuel, and then occasionally they get a cruise ship, occasionally they get a military vessel, and occasionally they get some cement. But they pretty much used up all of their uplands, and so bringing in bulk commodities, whether it's coal or ore or some other resource, probably isn't a good fit for that port. And similarly with Seward, they used to export coal out of there, but the conveyor has been removed, and Seward's sort of geared more towards tourism, fishing. They do have a boat yard there, but, and then you've got Whittier, which similarly is kind of focused on tourism. They've also got the tunnel. So when we think about the future and where are these resources going to go when we need to get them to market, Port McKenzie's sort of the natural fit. And you'll see there too, you can see the West Susitna Access Road. It gives you a glimpse of where the road would end up in the mountains. And you can also see the Shortland Spur. So we are, Port McKenzie is very close to Anchorage. We're only 2 miles apart by water, but in many ways we're worlds apart. Just for the record, we are not trying to mimic what the Port of Anchorage is doing. We view ourselves as an industrial port. It was originally envisioned as a bulk commodities export port. One of the reasons that we have the deep draft dock is because we used to export wood chips out of this port for Asia. And those wood chips were turned into paper. And then it's nice being where we're at because there's obviously a maritime industry here just 2 miles away. So for instance, Cook Inlet Tug and Barge, they're only a couple miles away. So we've got a base with tugs right there, as well as skilled labor and equipment. This is a photo of the proof of principle that the Army is doing back in October. This is a SeaTac Marine barge. And this is just a snapshot of the port itself. It's a small port. It was originally built in, at least the beginnings were started in 2000. We ended up with the 500-foot-long sheet pile, vertical face barge dock. And then in 2004, we started working on the deep draft dock. In 2010, we expanded the gravel pad by 7 acres, so we got about a 15-acre gravel pad. So what you see there is our 1,200-foot-long deep draft dock. At any low water, we maintain a depth of 60 feet. We do not have to dredge, so we can bring in Panamax-sized vessels. We've got, as I mentioned, the 500-foot-long bar stock. We've got high mass lights. We've got a bow ramp berth that we use for barges that have ramps for doing roll-on, roll-off. Everything you see in that photo right there is the port and the port district, so all those uplands are part of the port district, part of that 9,000 acres I mentioned. And then up in the top corner, you can see the old pad where the woodship operation was based, and then right behind that is where the, what we call the rail loop is at. That's where the rail would terminate, that 32-mile rail extension. If at any point you guys have any questions, by all means, please let me know. I'd be happy to answer. This is another view coming down the hill. Once again, we got paved road, three-phase power. We are operational year-round. Somebody comes to you like, oh, you can operate in winter. Yes, Anchorage does. We're 2 miles away. We can operate in the winter. In fact, the first, we got a float coming up, but the first ship that ever docked at Fort McKenzie docked in the middle of winter, January 2005. So it's totally doable. This is the largest ship we ever had at the port. This is the J.P. Zord. This was doing a test shipment of coal, just for, you know, comparison with other ships. I mean, this is a 736-foot-long ship drafting at 37.5 feet. This is the example of a barge using our barge dock. All that material in the background is Peruvian salt as part of the statewide DOT winter road maintenance contract. So similar to the hub and spoke model, salt shows up here. What can be transported by road is trucked. What needs to be transported to further locations, including Kenai, Kodiak, and points further south, either southeast, Juneau, Sitka, Skagway, Ketchikan, and Prince of Wales. The salt moves by barge. Here's an example of a barge using our bow ramp. This is a cruise construction. We're based in Palmer. We have three barges and a couple of tugs. We do a lot of work in Western Alaska. We move materials, building materials, cargo, rock, fuel, equipment. They usually mow in May, get everything out to the project site, and then come back in the fall. So emission tides. This is what the port looks like at high tide. So that right there, that where that ship's at, there's about 90 feet of water at the dock base, the deep trap dock base. So this is kind of a cool photo because this is from this past year. We have all three of our berths are being occupied at once by different operators. This image here is a map depicting land status. So one of the unique things about this region, this Point McKenzie region, is there's a lot of private property. So there's going to continue to be growth out here because there's private property, and you don't have a lot of that in Alaska. Less than 1% of land in Alaska is privately owned. This region has lots of private land, so we're going to continue to see growth out here. Everything in yellow is owned by the borough. Blue is owned by the university. Pink is owned by Native corporations. Purple is owned by the Mental Health Trust. And then what you see in green are state managed legislatively designated game refuge lands. It's important to note, too, you'll see the right of way for the Kinnikon Bridge. That comes up quite a bit. As you can imagine, working off the port, people ask me all the time, when are we getting a bridge? I don't have a good answer. Maybe it's a tunnel, who knows? But that's where that would go. And that right of way has been acquired. Zooming in a little bit further, this is once again the 9,000 acres of uplands, the 4 square miles of tide and submerged land. So you can see in a situation like this how much opportunity there may be. As I mentioned earlier, these lands are zoned industrial commercial. Business applicants can come out here without having to jump through all the commercial or the conditional use permit requirements. And the bridge right of way is acquired. You can see the hatch lines there. We've got the existing paved roads. We've got the rail loop and the rail alignment. And it might be a little difficult to see in here, but there's some vertical lines, and then there's some horizontal lines kind of running through there. Those are Chugach electric transmission lines. That small square in the upper part of the district, that's a substation and a submarine cable that runs across the inlet of the Chugach electric. There's a massive amount of energy that's being transmitted through this district. View at low tide, so you can see how dramatic it is when we back up. Here we are at high tide, and here we are at low tide. These are cold water, cold waters, high concentration of sediment. We don't get a lot of biologicals growing in our waters. Our piles are naturally sandblasted by the water daily. So our piles can remain clean, but we do have to fight like anything in water, especially that there's electrolysis going on with fire protection. Here's a photo of the first ships that ever docked at the Kingsley. This is a wood ship operation. These wood ships were being shipped over to Asia for paper, but this is what it looks like in the winter out there. So really, can you bring a ship in to port in the winter? Yes, you can. You've done it successfully. And we do not have to dredge at Port McKenzie. One of the reasons that we're able to use even deep water is because of our location. Right, we're at the base of Kinnick Arm there, and the 2 points across the port and then Cairns Point. Create a naturally scouring channel. The trade-off is we have stronger currents through there. On average, our currents on the ebb tide are around 6 knots, and then on the flood tide are around 3 knots. So that is a trade-off. You might hear from time to time that we can get strong currents, and we do, but nothing that can't be managed. In fact, we're this summer, we're going to be doing a study on our currents and have a navigational assessment performed so we have updated information. We also do bathymetric surveys every year to monitor what's going on in the bottom of the channel just to keep track with any sediments getting deposited or eroding. Here's a snapshot of the POSLE project that we had done. And these sleeves are 38 feet long, heavy gauge steel. They basically go around the pile and protect us basically on the pile. So it's kind of the best management practice that's being instituted for all new docks. The barge haul-out facility will go on the north side of the barge dock. This ramp would be approximately 200 feet long, 200 feet wide, 7% grade, all rock, no steel. And what this will allow us to do is haul barges up out of the water using marine airbags so we can store them over the winter. It's been, barge activity is on an upswing in the inlet, and by having a place where we can pull them out and store them, we'll free up some space in other locations. And folks like Cruise Constructor can actually keep their barges local versus having them stored in maybe Kodiak, maybe Homer, maybe Sewer, wherever they can find space. One of the things about the barge ramp that will also be nice is that we'll be able to, barges could go dry, so we could have the ability to roll on roll off. Tidal swings, and landing craft could also use the ramp. So
here's a conceptual drawing of what a bridge would look like, and this is more or less the location it would be constructed. I believe the state's working on a feasibility study of some sort for maybe a tunnel instead of a bridge. So it'll be interesting to see where that comes out and what that looks like. Once again, all the land you're seeing there, all the uplands where the dock's at, that's all for the district land. So in terms of future growth, development, land in the zone, industrial, commercial, everything there that you're looking at can be developed. Another project that's in the works is the Lexington Access Road. This is approximately 100-mile road that leads up into the Mineral District in the mountains. Once developed, that ore would come down to the district and either be processed on site and or shipped out to be processed somewhere else, but all that could come to Kinsey as well. This is a map that was provided to me by Ada. This shows land status, mineral claims, access routes, et cetera, in the area. Everything blue, which most of this map is blue, is state-owned land. And then what you see is sort of the reddish, pink or orange is native land. Then there's a ton of private property sprinkled throughout the fly here. And you'll notice down in the Kinsey region, all of the property. Just another shot of that alignment. And then the other piece, and one of the important pieces of this whole Point McKinsey puzzle is the Port McKinsey Rail Extension. And we've got quite a few photos to show of the existing alignment. As we mentioned, it's approximately 32 miles long. It connects Houston, the community of Houston, at Miller's Reach Road, down to the port. There's been 25 miles of embankment that's been constructed, and that remaining 7 miles is through the McKinsey Farm, so it's flat, well-drained ground, and it should be fairly easy to construct through that segment. This is what it looks like from the sky. It's basically a road, more or less, through the wilderness. There's a total of 6 segments. Segment 6 starts in Houston. We call that the Y. That actually has track on it. It's currently in use just for storing cars then basically from segment 6 down to Ayrshire Road, that section is all completed, so you can literally drive in vehicle from Houston down to Ayrshire. All the bridges are in. And then at Ayrshire South, as you get into segment 2, that's the area that still needs to be completed. And then from after segment 2, you get back into the port district, and all that embankment is completed. So now I'll just run through a few different photos. An example of the Y in Houston. This is all the land around here. Is owned primarily by the borough. So there's opportunity in a siding here for moving cargo. Here we go, heading to the farms. So that big swath that you see on the screen is to the right. That's the cleared right of way. So that's the area where the embankment would be constructed. And this is where segment 2 meets segment 1. actually looking north. So we would head south to take us down to the port. So a shot of the railroad down in the port district. And that's what it looks like in the sky. That loop is approximately an 80-acre parcel. That loop's about a mile long. So that wraps up my portion.
All right. Thanks, Dave. The chair and committee members, you know, first, just appreciate the opportunity to join the committee hearing today. You know, we've worked closely with the port and the Massachusetts Borough for a number of years now on this project, and I know it's an item of interest for many Alaskans as well. And, you know, when we were down here presenting on behalf of the railroad last month, we had the opportunity to talk about this project a little bit as part of our larger overview. And since that committee hearing, have a few more updates as a result of some of the ongoing outreach. But you know, this is a project that is obviously relevant to the Alaska Railroad, who, you know, the plan would be that the railroad would ultimately own and operate this extension line down to the port, and certainly relevant to Port McKenzie, as it would open up a lot of multimodal opportunities, creating efficiencies in bringing in cargo or exporting cargo through Port McKenzie. We know it's a top priority for a lot of folks in the valley, but it's really a project with statewide implications, and that's certainly been reflected in the investment the state has made to date. As Mr. Griffin mentioned, over $180 million has already been invested in this project, and a lot of significant work has been completed. But unfortunately, you know, budget constraints have caused the project to go dormant over about the last 10 years. The Alaska Railroad, along with the Massachusetts Borough, has remained engaged in looking into opportunities to try to advance this project. Nothing, you know, successful to resume construction to date, but it's something that we continue to work at. In 2021, we submitted a federal competitive grant application that was centered around building the extension just from the main line to the Titan plant, so 18 miles of rail extension. That would have allowed the Alaska Railroad to haul LNG up to the interior. That was not a successful effort, and you know, does not necessarily look like that market opportunity is still there today, but we are looking at other grant opportunities and other potential customers. So just a reminder to the committee on the remaining work to be done. As Mr. Griffin mentioned, we have the majority of the embankment work in, but there's that one section that still requires embankment. After 10 years, there's probably some grave repairs that need to happen, some sub-ballast work, and then, of course, the track beyond that Y section, section 6, as well as the communications. And then certainly out near the port at the terminal reserve, the associated you know, support facilities and infrastructure that we need to have out there. At the end of 2023, the railroad had a local firm prepare an estimate based on, you know, the remaining work to be done. And that estimate came back. We are ballparking now in 2025. Between $275 and $300 million required to complete the project in its entirety. That's not a small price tag by any means, but we're encouraged by the opportunities that we see around federal competitive grants, and we do plan to submit an FRA, a Federal Railroad Administration, CRISI grant application for this project. That's an 80-20 program, so there would be a 20% local match required. That, you know, at the high end, $300 million would represent a $60 million investment. You know, how we would meet that match requirement is still an open discussion. You know, we've been putting in a fair amount of time and outreach in recent months to see, you know, how could we replicate the model that we were able to successfully use for our Steward passenger dock replacement, in which we were able to issue Alaska Railroad revenue bonds secured by an anchor tenant and a long-term commitment. Is that a model that we could replicate to complete the Port McKenzie rail extension? And we approached this discussion from a couple different angles. First, you know, we looked internally at what would the scope of anchor tenants that we would require need to be, because we know, you know, just from hearing from customers, hearing from community members, we know there's interest in this rail extension. We know that there are businesses that have an interest in seeing this rail line built and connecting the port to our broader infrastructure. But how, what size of customer would we be looking for here? And based on the assumption of bonding for a $60 million match, as well as likely needing a commercial loan in the $15 to $20 million range for the associated rolling stock and track equipment, probably some improvements to our Fairbanks terminal to be able to support a new business, we are looking for a customer that could provide roughly 500,000 tons of annual freight cargo for a 30-year duration. And that, you know, sort of break it down, one way of looking at it would be roughly two unit trains, about 40, 45 cars each, traveling between Port McKenzie and Fairbanks, roughly twice a week, twice every 8 days for 30 years. So not a small amount of volume that we'd be looking for that. We have, in partnership with the port, as well as Representative McCabe and the Matthew Borough, have been reaching out to different customers and businesses that have expressed interest in the rail extension. And over the last few months, we've conducted over 24 fairly informal, confidential interviews with different customers, businesses, other organizations. We did ask that they be confidential just for the sake of there's a lot of, talk about future plans that, might not necessarily be ready for public discussion. But to get a sense of what the business landscape and interest is out there. And we heard from a number of customers that they'd be interested in using the rail line, but for more incidental moves. That's certainly something that matters for those customers. The efficiencies that can be brought by rail transportation can make a big difference to the bottom line, so we appreciate that as an economic development benefit. And certainly for our existing mainline, those incidental moves certainly are helpful for our bottom line, but it's actually difficult to fund a long-term debt service commitment with. We've also heard from a smaller handful of customers who indicated that if tracks were in the ground already, they would likely take a hard look at moving their current operations over to Port McKenzie. Unfortunately, that was only roughly a third of the volume we were looking for currently, and it's certainly not a small number, and something that we'll be hoping to grow and build a little bit more momentum, a little more awareness of the opportunities that we might have here. And then, I think there's a small group of large projects that are currently in the conceptual planning phase, but, if they were to go, could perhaps provide the volumes that we'd be looking at here. But absent a substantial anchor tenant, going for the bonding approach on this, it's difficult for the Alaska Railroad at this point. As a self-sustaining state-owned corporation, we need to be able to achieve an income to be able to support our capital program. I need to have that security that the business will be there if this is something that we plan to support. So we'll continue that business outreach, continue looking for customers, but that's what we're seeing in the landscape currently. Okay. I'll pause and come up for air here for a moment if there are questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Clemens, I need a history lesson. I think the railroad used to have a tenant like this. I think it was a coal mine that moved 1.2 million tons. Did that all go to sewer? Did that go to a variety of ports? Where did that all hit Tidewater?
Yes, for the chair, Senator Keel, Yes, so that was used about a coal mine out of Healy, and that coal was hauled down to our coal dock in Seward. So we had a conveyor belt there. At the top end of that market, we were hauling over 1 million tons of coal annually. Unfortunately, that was a situation where the global market for export coal simply wasn't sustained. And so that business eroded. As Mr. Griffin mentioned earlier, it's been a few years since we were able to export coal, and in the intervening years, the conveyor belt has deteriorated to the point where we had to dismantle that equipment, just because even if the market came back tomorrow, the conveyor would not be operable any longer. But yes, we did have that, high volume customer that, that could have met this model. But again, we'd be looking for a 30-year duration.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions, if that's okay. And one in response, that I have talked to Mr. Isabella directly, and that is true that the business model went down worldwide, but it's coming back up, especially China and India. I understand that it was offered to him that he would have to buy the rail cars, to which he was like, yeah, no. So there's some interesting back and forth in that one. A couple quick questions. I know you said the anchor tenants are private. I'd love to know if the Massey Borough has any thoughts on those, because I know there are others out there, just in case, because that's part of the business plan. And that was the question I know the committee has asked directly. Mm-hmm. We don't want to build something and then there's no business, right? I know there's a plan for it and others. I would like to know, I think you gave a number, but again, just kind of back up what the railroad says versus what Massey Borough says on discussions for that, Dave, on anything, because there's a lot of folks we've talked to with a lot of, I guess the bottom line here is that there is, we're on hold. Until we have the rail, we can't do any of this. And even if it's a small amount of things, I don't know how we get the economic activity. If we don't build it, we can't move forward. They're not going to come. So I think the committee's recognizing this now, that to get more state activity, more private sector growth, more tax revenue to the state that it needs to continue to fund operations, we're getting at kind of a stop here. So I just want to know if there's, in the business plan model, if there's anything else. I'll ask and just be done, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to see more. I know the U.S. Coast Guard, as you mentioned, it has a plan to maybe come there as well. If you didn't mention that, Dave, I don't think I missed it. Did you miss that already? Maybe you could just mention that, because that's the federal side of things. And then there is tax impact for Anchorage, if you guys have assessed it. If not, because they're instituting a tax, which, of course, drives up product prices. We don't have that in the borough, which is something should be considered. And the last one will be for the railroad, which is, I know there's been discussion about a short line that would be interested in perhaps taking over if it doesn't work as well for the last railroad. I know that was a couple, Mr. Chairman, but they just covered the whole thing, get in here to discuss it. I can rephrase them if you need it, but if anybody can take those couple, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Senator Schauer, through the chair. I think the first question pertained to anchor tenant and or businesses that the borough has been working with or speaking to.
In addition to what the borough said, correct? Mm-hmm.
Well, I will say that all the businesses that we've spoken to, all the contacts and information that we've gathered, we shared that with Megan and her team. And we've actually recently, over the last few months, have been meeting on a regular basis to share information on different businesses that have been reaching out and talking to the board, just so that everybody's on the same page and we're sharing all the information. We don't have any agreements with, I should back up. We have one agreement in place at the port right now, and that is with Central Alaska Energy. They are looking at putting in a bulk fuel storage system at the port, in which they would be running fuel right now by truck up and down the road system. So that's the only agreement that we have with anyone right now, and that's a long-term lease. The thought of bringing an anchor tenant is something that the port has struggled with over the years, and there's been some starts and fits here and there. Most recently, we've been contacted by a fuels company that was looking to convert biomass into a sustainable aviation fuel. And they were very interested in the rail because they could move wood waste and or any sort of other biomass from the interior down to the port, in which they would convert, make the sustainable aviation fuel, and then sell to the airport or whoever would want to purchase that. There's also been some talk about, expanding the cement, the import of cement to the port. And if there was a rail, then we would be using that to take the rail or to take the cement into the interior for different projects. But we don't have anything firm other than lots of discussion. So the folks that are exploring the Ambler Mining District, they've reached out to us and spoken with us. There's also been some hydrogen fuel derivative companies that have spoken to us. But nothing's landed yet. So we're still working out those sorts of, we're hoping, we're entertaining any sort of long-term agreements. But our focus most recently has just been on trying to make our port more capable, primarily for barges, and working on developing a material source within the port district so that we can start mining material and moving that to Western Alaska. Now, I do think there's potential once we open up our material resource to use the train or the rail to move that product north, and then vice versa, possibly moving things, material in particular, on the rail down to the port. Then there's also a company that, and I hate to mention names, so I'm not going to mention any names because it's all subjective, but there is a company that is looking to drill for ammonia up in the Houston area, in which case they would need the rail to move that ammonia down to the port for export as well. So there's lots of sort of irons in the fire, but nothing's hit yet.
That's correct.
I through the chair, Senator Schauer, I haven't spoken to the Coast Guard about a Coast Guard base. So I mean, we're open to that, and the fact that we've got that 4 square miles of tidal submerged land and 2 miles of shoreline, there's plenty of room for federal entity to come in there and set up a base, and we would totally welcome working with the Coast Guard. Most of my discussions with the Coast Guard are specific to auditing our port for facility security protocols and making sure we're adhering to the regulations and things like that.
Mr. Chairman, I have, just for the record, and they are interested. It's a little bit common of chicken or the egg. That's where I feel like they're at with this. The railroad mm-hmm. building it, but they are interested down there. I just wanted to make sure it was out there. And I had, my last question, Mr. Chairman, was just for her on the short rail discussion. That's all I had. Thank you.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, Senator Schauer. First, before addressing the short line question, I just, echo Mr. Griffin's comments. It's been really helpful having this, ongoing bi-weekly, monthly meetings with the port, with the borough, just to, make sure we're keeping open lines of communication about, new opportunities and making sure that we're talking to the same customers and organizations, just to make sure we're capturing whatever interest there is and, finding new entities, trying to, again, create a sense of momentum and opportunity around completing this infrastructure. So, for the report out today, this is by no means a completed effort. We're continuing on with those discussions. Certainly with some of those larger organizations, we want to be sure that we're keeping this potential rail extension, top of mind for them if they're thinking about their future transportation plans, and also helping those organizations to understand that, the full ask might not be $300 million to finish this. It might be the 20% local match. It might be that divided by some other number of customers. We're trying to be creative in how we can find, different stakeholders that have an interest in completing this infrastructure and see if we can build a coalition to find a way to make this happen for Alaska. Because again, you know, as we've been talking, I think there's certainly the obvious economic development benefits to completing this, but I know we've also heard concerns around resiliency, having enhanced port multimodal infrastructure north of Kinnick Farm, and so I think that's another aspect that we're helping to get the word out about as well. As to your question about the short line, yes, I mean we're happy to talk with any partners about opportunities to complete this rail extension and get service to the port. The way that the right of way was set up and the work that's been done to date, there'd be no obstacle to having that conversation with a private rail line. I think we'd certainly want to understand if they were coming back with a drastically different estimate, where those disparities might exist, just to, validate kind of a shared understanding of what the final infrastructure would look like, but certainly we're happy to have that conversation.
Thank you.
Senator Keel. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Griffin, can you talk to us a little bit about your toll structure, the fees, whether it's tonnage across the face, a vessel tonnage, or how do you pay the bills?
Senator Keel, I'll be the chair. We have a tariff. We're on our third version of that. It's approved by our borough assembly. I don't have a copy of that in front of me, actually, if you wanted specifics, but we charge dockage and wharfage. So dockage would be based on the length of the vessel. So whenever we have a big ship in, like that ship right there, for instance, they're unloading salt. Salt, I do know the tariff price on that, $1.31 is short time. Sands, rock, gravels, $1.31 a short ton. Cement, $3 a short ton. So when the dust settled, the ship was there approximately 10 days. We ended up with 52,000 tons of salt. That was roughly $125,000. So what I tell folks most of the time, whenever you see a ship at Port Mac, it's about $100,000, roughly. So, obviously barges, a little bit different. Typically barges are in and out, so we don't get as much dockage. It's more warpage. I love having a ship hang out at the deep draft dock because it's more money for the port. We are an enterprise fund, so the idea is that we are generating our revenue and supporting operations, maintenance, and infrastructure development based on the revenue generated at the port.
Absolutely. And do your tariff structure cover your depreciation, or is that something that you work back with the borough about?
Thank you, Chair. Senator Keel. That is something we currently work with the borough on, but the idea of setting the port up as an enterprise fund is so that we're factoring in depreciation. The idea is that area-wide tax dollars are not supporting the port. It's funding itself, taking care of its operations, its maintenance, and its infrastructure requirements and obligations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Just for both of you, since the federal delegation, our three, obviously with the new administration, it seems pretty keen on, and not only Alaska, but growing the economy and infrastructure. Have you had any meetings or plan to have any meetings or reached out to discuss with them what they may be able to do to help make sure we get those directed our way for these types of projects for economic growth in Alaska? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Through the chair, Senator Schauer. We have had discussions. We work really closely with the Valley directors that serve under Senator Jankowski and Sullivan and Representative Begich. I've had one meeting with Representative Begich, and he was very interested in learning more about the port and what we would need or what we would like, kind of our wish list, to make ourselves more capable. And I think that the rail obviously plays a big role in that. So that's sort of where our discussion primarily focuses on, figuring out ways to get the rail completed.
And through the chair, Senator Schauer, yes, absolutely. This is a topic that we have remained engaged on with the congressional delegation. certainly will continue to do so, again, in going after those federal grant opportunities and, just trying to keep this project top of mind for how we can try to advance completing this infrastructure.
I have a question briefly. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, how do materials get from the dock to the rail yard that's in the uplands? How does that happen?
Senator Brookman, let me back up here. There's an image. So at present, any materials that are going to be placed on the rail or come off the rail would have to be put on the chassis and then driven down to the dock. So right now, everything you see in that photo is all within the port district. So it's just a transportation corridor up the bluff, right? So we've got about a 100-foot tall bluff separating us from the rail loop to the dock. And there are plans to make a shorter switchback that would connect, so you would be roughly a half to three quarter mile away from the dock up to the railroad, versus right now as it is, it's about 2 miles. Drive up the bluff, up the road there, there's an intersection, and you would do a U-turn and then come back to the railroad. Now, it really depends on what type of cargo you're talking about, but if it was like bulk ore or fuel, then you could just conveyor it down or pipe and transfer it. But if it's containers, then chassis and trailers, so you'd have truck and chassis running back and forth. That was the model that we looked at with Ambler, the folks that were evaluating the port for bringing in containers. They were going to, 20-foot TEUs, conic containers, they're going to fill those with ore, put those on rail, bring those down, and then just leave the ore in the containers, and then load those onto the ships. If it's something kind of, let's just say West of Sitna, right, they're trucking ore out of the mountains, bringing it down, then they would probably stockpiling the ore, and in that case, they would get either trucked down or on a conveyor. We have a conveyor system in place right now from the top of the old former wood chip operation. That's what they need to do. That little 5-acre pad right there, just on top of the bluff, that's where the wood chips were staged, put on the conveyor, and then they were loaded via conveyor onto the ships.
Thank you. Any final questions for Mr. Griffin or Ms. Clinton? Hearing none, thank you guys for being here. I appreciate it. Senate Transportation Committee will meet again on Thursday, March 13th, and we will hear a presentation from the Department of Transportation on highway, bike, and pedestrian safe. If there is no further business to come before the committee, we are adjourned at 2:45 p.m.